Blog Talk Radio.
Hello there, everyone. This is Simone, and we have Sylvia on the line. Hello, Sylvia.
Hello, hello. Yes.
And the name of our show is... I've just drawn a blank.
It should be there up on the site. The name of our show. This always, I know we always talk about different topics we want for the show, and today is about, have you ever felt frustrated with, you know, when teachers don't believe in your child? So you're joining us on the Access Possibility School radio show, Rediscovering the Joy of Learning. And
that's the piece that I was missing.
Go for it.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's about when your child's teacher doesn't believe in your kid. And Adele is just joining us, one of our other teachers at the Access Possibility School. Hello, Adele.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. How's the background noise? I'm sitting in the park by the pond with the fountain.
You're good.
Okay, cool. I'm so glad.
Awesome.
Hi, guys.
Hi. You mean teachers get out and about? What?
It is President's Day. It's kind of a holiday here in the U.S.
So, yeah, today we're talking about, you know, when you're frustrated, when you have a teacher that is teaching your kids and they're putting labels on your kids or they have really low expectations. I have an example from my own teaching. There was this group of this class. And they had this teacher, and they were crazy, and all the kids were doing really poorly in school. And then that teacher left, and then they got a teacher that really believed in them and really, you know, just was like, wow, you guys are really amazing, and you're really cool, and acknowledged them for who they are. And they just turned around, and they were excited about learning, and they started a recycling program by themselves. And it was really just her point of view that totally changed the class. So, anybody want to add to that?
They've actually done studies on this, which is exactly that. Like when teachers have low expectations, that's basically what the results are. And when teachers have high expectations, not high expectations in the sense of like, I want to say like in the negative sense, but when they see what kids are capable of and believe in them, and acknowledge them for that, for what they're capable of, and encourage that in them, then kids actually achieve. This is, you know, it's beyond just observation. They've studied that, and they've found that to be true. So it's really, like, I would invite people to be willing to be aware of the teacher's points of view, and where that is impacting maybe the kids.
Yeah, and I know that Gary Douglas, the founder of Access Consciousness, he said what he would do with his daughter before she would go out the door every day to school was he would pot and pock. That's point of creation, point of destruction. That's a tool that we use, which is like an eraser for the whiteboard. All the projections, expectations, limitations, and rejections, so all of the stuff that had been piled on his daughter by the school or by the teachers or whatever. And I'm not out to make teachers evil because there are amazing teachers out there.
There
are people that are not so amazing. And she said it really helped her, particularly because she had, she was dyslexic. And so there was all these labels and stuff that were just being foisted on her. And she's a brilliant person. And he said, once he started doing that, it gave her more space to choose whatever she would like to choose rather than being bombarded by these thoughts of these teachers.
You know, what's interesting too is this piece of, you know, what, you know, the topic about are we frustrated with what teachers believe about our children or child. And it's, like being aware, I mean, I have a son who's 17 and I practice this with him as well. And, you know, with a classroom of 20 plus students at times, you know, I would go out and for a run or do whatever I was doing outdoors and kind of I would use the alphabet, right? So I'd kind of go through the alphabet and kind of go from A to Z of every child that, you know, was in my class. And I'd just take a moment to go, okay, say it's Alexandra. Wow, what is she up to? You know, what is she requiring? And what's great about her? And where is she shining? But it was this moment of beginning to be in the question about each student apart from the grade, apart from the grammar, that just had me begin to see them different. And so when I would meet them Monday morning or the next morning, it was a sense of like, hi. And so it's almost like I was erasing all my own judgments and conclusions about who I thought they were and where they were struggling. Because as teachers, oftentimes I think that's one of the places we get sucked into. It's like when it comes to grades, sorry about the noise in the background, motorcycle there, but when it comes to grades or a child needing to make a certain benchmark, not that that's not what we're also looking at in the classroom and looking at what they require, but sometimes that just clouds really connecting with the child and really beginning to ask those questions where you go, wow, what can I do different to reach them? What do they require that might be different than their, you know, neighbor next door? So just that piece, I also invite teachers just to begin to go, wow, what's right about this child? Where are they shining? And then the question of what do they require that I haven't noticed or I'm not aware of?
And that's a great tool, Sylvia, for parents too. And they notice, like, you know, maybe the teacher does have a point of view, or that, you know, you have a meeting with the teacher and they're like, hey, this is what's going on. Well, as a parent, you can stop and you can take that into account and then ask, like, okay, what's right about my child and what's right about this situation that maybe I'm not getting, that maybe the teacher's not getting, and invite yourself to, like, maybe not take that, you know, take the teacher's advice with a grain of salt, and not in a defense against what they're saying, but as, like, okay, that may be true, and what else might be going on? What's right about, you know, where are my student child's strengths? How can we use that to maybe change what's not working so well?
Another great tool, I find, I do this in the airport a lot, which is kind of weird, but it was one of the ways for me to practice this tool. And when I'm going through customs, I will look at the customs officer that I'm going through or whomever I'm, you know, whether it's baggage handling or whatever, and I ask what energy is required here. Do I need to pull energy from this person? Do I need to flow energy? And it's as simple as that. You don't have to stand on your head or click your heels together or do anything strange. You just have to ask in your head, okay, what energy flow is required here to make this ease for me and everybody involved? And it's amazing. All of a sudden, I have this custom agent in front of me who's smiling and chatting and how's your holiday? And, you know, and so it's a really great tool to use for people that may be a little more difficult or that your child is struggling with. They can find out what is required without losing themselves to make it easy for them.
Simone, can you say a little bit more about that when you say the energy pulls or the energy flows, like what that means for somebody who's maybe not heard of that before?
So if you've ever been to, like, a concert, like Lady Gaga or Madonna or any of those guys that are super engaging, where you just lean in, you want to know more, or maybe it's just somebody you know in your life that you would call charming. And what they do is they basically are pulling your energy, pulling that energy from behind you, through you, and they just sort of pull you in, and you want to know more. Now, it's not the sort of thing that you experience sometimes where you feel sucked dry and you're just a husk afterwards. That's not it at all. And then there's other times where it might go the other way, where this person is like on empty all the time. They're always sort of like, you know, we have kids like that, not in our school at the moment, but I've had kids in my classes like that who are just sort of these sort of sloths and they barely move. And if you flow masses of amounts of energy to them, it fills them up. And all of a sudden you notice that they start to become more alert and more present. And it sounds really strange because it's so easy. And it's amazing how it works. And I've also noticed that it's a muscle. So the more you practice it, like me with my custom agents, the better you get at it. And there are people that I know that are so good at it. And they're not rock stars or anybody like that. But they just literally, you want to hang on their every word because they're so good at this particular tool. Answer that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I hope that helps. That helps me.
So I'm just looking at our description here. So low expectations being put in a box. Another tool that I often use is like expanding out. I know you were talking about that, I think maybe last week or something, Adele, is that right? Were you talking about just making yourself really big?
I might have. My memory is not that good. I'm like, a whole week ago, and you want me to remember what I said?
You know.
It's not totally in my skill set.
My hopes and dreams are a little overabundant.
It's amazing. But yes, I do love that tool, especially if somebody's telling you something that maybe doesn't make you totally happy to hear, like, you know, your student is struggling in math, your child is struggling in math. We tend to like put our dukes up and like fight against that, right? Like, what do you mean? Or, oh yeah, you're right, I'm so sorry, like defending for or against that. And part of expanding out is just dropping your barriers. So instead of having to like resist that or like, oh my God, no, or yes, just kind of dropping your barriers and being like, huh, okay, like being present with it for a moment. And then kind of what Sylvia was saying, like expand out and then ask a question, like, is that true to begin with? Mm-hmm. Or what is that? What's going on there? And let's take a look at that. And then, you know, sometimes it's that they're not good at math is rare. As a math teacher for the Access School, like I've yet to meet someone who's actually not good at math. They may not understand it the way the teacher is explaining it. They may have missed one piece of information that they're catching up on, or they may just be interested in something different and it's not especially interesting to them. So, you know, they don't really want to put their time and energy and attention into it. And then it's like, okay, well, how can we make this fun? How can we make this easier? Whether it's actually finding a way to make whatever subject it is interesting to them, or creating some other incentive that has nothing to do with that subject that gives them the incentive to like, okay, let's deal with it, let's get it done, let's move through it, and then we can move on to whatever is fun. So really looking at like, okay, where is the kid functioning from that they're struggling?
A subject that the kid doesn't like sounds like a great topic for a radio show, actually.
Ah, that's a good idea. Thanks for noticing that. My kid hates blank.
Exactly.
I know you like social studies, Simone. I cannot get into it.
There's another thing I'd like to add, too.
Sorry, go ahead.
That as parents, as teachers, there's a piece of, you know, when we talk about empowering, it's like that sense of, you know, beginning to ask, what is it that I do know about my child? Because I know, I mean, I've been on both sides. I've been the parent, I've been the teacher. So it's like, for parents, you might often say, what's that sense of empowering? What do you know? Because oftentimes, you know, we receive so much data, quote unquote, you know, their grades, their reading level, their math level. And then with that, definitions of what's wrong with your child, what needs to be fixed. And that can weigh really heavy on parents. And oftentimes that heaviness is that it's not true, at least all the meaning that's been tied to that. Mm-hmm. So that pieces of, like, asking yourself as a parent, what do I know about my child? What will work for them? And then, you know, if you're willing to take it a next step, it's like asking the child, what do they know is going to work for them? And those are things that, before Access Consciousness, I was never asking myself. I was never looking at, I mean, maybe never, but rarely was I ever asking, what do I know here? It was always, who can tell me what they know, whether it was the teacher, the counselor, the doctor. So this is one of the things that makes, you know, Access Possibility Schools so different with the Access Consciousness Schools. It really is that piece of empowering parents, teachers, the kids, to really tap into that space of what if you actually do know what's going to work for you. Yes.
Sorry. You said something that was so brilliant in there, and it was kind of like a blip, and I don't want it to get lost, which is ask your kid what they know will work for them. And I've seen this with, like, my tutoring students, where the parents are actually willing to ask them, okay, like, what time would work better for you? Would you like to do it right after school? Do you need an hour to chill out and then do it? Do you want to do it in the evening, like after dinner? What's going to actually work best for you? Because they know. And if you're willing to ask them, they'll let you know. And willing to ask them from, like, not your point of view of what they should choose, but, like, actually ask them, you know? Yeah. Like, if you ask them... And then you, but you ask them, like, you've already decided, they're aware of that. They're going to tell you, but then if you ask them and then don't do it, they're going to get upset because you've now asked them and then dismissed them. But if you ask them and then both honor them and hold them to it, right? Now you've asked them, they've given you an answer. Well, now you've told me this is what works for you. So now it's your job to honor your commitment. If it doesn't work for you, like for the example of tutoring, well, you told me that showing up for a tutoring session at 4 o'clock after you've chilled out for half an hour after school, that works for you. Then now you need to show up and honor your side of the commitment. If that doesn't work for you and that's changed, then you need to let me know. And then what else will work? But if you said that's what works this, as a child, as a student, then now your job is to honor your commitment. But if you've included them, then that should actually work for them.
Yeah,
I've had including them as well. Once that kids are included, there's almost this joy to follow through, whatever they choose, right?
Yeah.
Checklist time, it's like, oh, it's time for this. Like, they know, they'll remind themselves. So that sense of empowering them to have a say on what's going to work. And then check in, hey, how's it working for you? Not so well. Would you like to change some of it, you know? But that ongoing question and... in some way, there too, there's a sense of like that we don't trust kids, you know, because they're two, because they're five, because they're teenagers. I mean, there's always a story of like a sense like, oh no, you can't give them that much choice. What will happen? And what if actually that's probably one of the biggest lies? They do know. And,
and
if they see something that doesn't work, you know, that's more information for them too.
And if you think about it in terms of, like, our job as adults is to raise them to be adults, it's like, at what age do you start giving them the ability to make choices for themselves and honor their choices? It's like, why wouldn't you start when they're two and let them know that they have choice and then see what their choice creates and empower them by giving them choice and honoring that they have a choice, acknowledging their choice. And you may want to let them know, like, well, what would that choice create before they actually make a choice that might not create the most for them? Or let them try it out, see how it is. I know that there's a facilitator in Access who talks about her daughter with food just wanted to eat ice cream. And most parents would, like, be like, no, you can't just eat ice cream. That makes me a bad parent, and that's bad nutrition, And she actually let her daughter just eat as much ice cream as she desired, and she just ate and ate and ate ice cream. Well, it turned out she actually required calcium for her body and her bones, and she'd rather have ice cream than drink milk or eat cheese or whatever other form of getting that. So kids do know what they require and what's going to work for them if we're willing to invite them to that. So... Mm-hmm.
Well, the interesting thing I've found with giving kids choice is their development changes. Like, they start to make choices from a sense of empowerment, and they it, I don't want to say they grow up all of a sudden, but they do. They're recognized as people rather than you're a kid and you don't know anything. And I've seen development of like kindergarten kids go from like in a year that of a kindergarten kid or lower to a kid that was in grade two as far as motor skills and language and all kinds of things like that, just because I was willing to give them choice and I was willing to honor their choices as well and see them for who they were rather than you're just a kid and you don't know anything.
And I want to add that this is a skill that is developed. So, because we had kids that came into the Access School and they've not been asked, what would you like to choose? So we would ask and it would be like, I don't know, or, you know, like, or no answer at all. And the more that we've asked, the more that they have claimed their choice, the more they've stepped into it, which is kind of what you're saying about that development. Absolutely. And showing up as leaders. So it wasn't like, oh, we asked and all of a sudden they were like, yes. So it does
no,
take
absolutely
time.
Not.
It is a process. So just because, you know, you ask a question once and they go, oh, I don't know, or I'm not interested. Well, okay. So would you be willing to keep asking and cultivating that? And just like any skill, practicing.
That's a question we get a lot from parents too, and teachers. That's like, but the kid says, I don't know. Well, mm-hmm. we've discovered that choice is new to lots of people and kids. So if you give them, you know, two or three choices to begin with, to build that bridge, and so that they know that whatever they choose isn't wrong, because that was the biggest thing I found, was that the kids that came into our school, I would ask them, okay, would you like to do this? Would you like to do this? And they would sort of, well, I don't know. And part of that was, I don't want to be wrong. So I'm not going to make a choice because I don't want to be wrong.
Yeah.
So that's big, is allowing your kid to go, oh, actually, you're not going to be wrong here, whatever you choose. There may be things that you might want to consider if you make this choice, like Adele said, and you're not going to be wrong. It's just a choice, and then you'll be aware of what that choice creates.
Right. And you can ask them again afterwards if they choose it, right? Okay, cool. So what did that choice create? Was that your best choice? Would you make a different choice the next time? And just, mm-hmm. again, asking those questions. Those questions actually give them the chance to look at things on their own and come to their own awareness about what they're choosing, about what they're creating, about what they'd like to create.
Yeah.
So that it's not you telling them, but them coming to it on their own.
Well, and a great tool for that too, let's say their choice, the outcome isn't that great, which happens to us all. A great tool is, what's right about this I'm not getting, or what's right about me I'm not getting, because it gives you a sense of, oh, okay, so I made this choice, and actually, you know, this created this over here that I wouldn't have known. And it might just be that you now know that going outside in a blizzard without socks on and shoes, that your feet get really cold, and you know, now you know.
Simone, is that one of your choices? Have you done that? It sounds like
no,
you might know.
No, I haven't actually. I looked at those other kids and thought, I think I'll just not do that.
I also wanted to offer another one, you know, given that that's, you know, part of one of the questions on our description was, are you frustrated when your teacher puts labels on your child and then has low expectations? It's that, like, moment, I mean, this can be used for anything, really, but that moment when we hear information, you know, I don't know if many of you have noticed, like, you'll hear something, and some of the automatic ways of responding is you either resist, right, you know, resist or react, or you're like, oh, they must be right, or you agree and align. So it's like, those are just one, you know, two of different ways to be with that, but either one of those kind of hooks you into whatever they said. So whether you're resisting and aligning to it, it makes it real. So the question, one of the tools from Active Consciousness is that in your head, as you're hearing information, it's just, wow, interesting point of view. They have that point of view, and it can be about anything. And really, it's like, how do you create that space where you hear it, but it's not about resisting or reacting to it. It's really about being in the question, like, okay, interesting point of view, and what other information do I require? What else is possible? Which is another question. that just continues to keep it all open rather than closing things up and buying that as true and then labeling your child, oh, they don't know how to read.
Yeah.
You know, the moment we say that, we begin to create that. Yeah, go ahead.
Another question that popped into my head that I don't know that we've said is there another way to create this result?
Uh-huh.
Like, because a lot of times in schools, especially traditional schools, even in kindergarten, there's a result that teachers are looking for. So it can be as simple as, like, a snowman project, right? And they're looking for it to come out like a snowman. And, you know, it's like, here are cotton balls and three circles and a rectangle and two rectangles to make a hat. And it's supposed to come out looking like a snowman. And maybe your child is especially creative and looks outside the box, but the teacher really wants it to look like a snowman, right? It's result-oriented. Yeah. So in those cases, whether it's like I'd like my child to learn to read or write or do math or learn dates for history or countries, whatever the outcome is, if it's not working in the way that it's being taught, is there another way of creating that desired outcome?
Well,
I love it.
Something to do with homework, too. Like, I mean, maybe it's that your kid is really good at doing five things at once, but is really terrible at, quote, unquote, focusing. So it could also be that as well.
Right. So, yeah, it may be like, okay, sitting down and doing one task at a time isn't going to work, but if we do, like, three things at the same time or jump around between all, you know, they may have three different homework assignments. Well, some kids may like to do one assignment and then the next and then the next. Some may want to, like, jump around and do one question on this one and one question on the next one and one question on the next one.
That's how I do my house cleaning.
Me too.
Yeah. So, you know, or it may be like do, you know, 10 minutes of homework and then go run around for 10 minutes or, you know, and just get away from it entirely and then come back for 10 minutes. So there's a million different ways of doing it. And you may look at like, okay, well, this is the way we've been doing it. That's not working. Well, what else is possible? What are the different options? And that also, again, brings us back to that, like, have a conversation with your kid and invite them into that. Like, what do they know would work for them? What ideas might they have? And you may try it and they say, well, this will work. And it doesn't work. Okay, great. Like, let's try something else.
Well, and also go ahead, Sylvia.
Well, that's the gift. It's like, what if that's really the all of learning? It's like, you get to choose again and again and again and again. And that's not oftentimes what we're told or taught. It's kind of like, you decided, that's it. It's your doom. You will take that to your grave. But it's like, wow, what if you can choose again? I mean, how much more ease will that create? And given that our radio show is Love and Learning and Rediscovering the Joy of Learning, it's like these tools that we're sharing with parents, teachers, kids, it really is like getting over, I don't know if it's getting over or going around all that heaviness of you must do it this way to create more of that lightness of what would bring that joy to learning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also like there's this point of view, particularly well, just in subjects in general, and in some subjects like math, for instance, going more linear and building a foundation is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other subjects where, like we've had an experience lately where the kids are like, I am really bored. This is why I'm not doing my stuff is because I'm bored out of my tree. And as soon as we shifted things, all of a sudden they engaged and they were excelling and there was this space of like, yay! So looking at that too, is your child actually just really bored, you know? Is that why they're having this problem with the teacher or, you know? So that's something to look at too is, you know, are they being challenged or are they missing foundation tools and that's or information? And that's why they're not knowing what's going on. So there's so many things to ask questions about because when you ask a question, you get the information.
And have fun with it as you're doing it, right? Like,
yeah,
just ask, see what shows up, ask again.
Yeah.
We've got just like 1 minute left, guys.
We do. So anything you want to say?
Action-packed topic.
Well, I would just like to invite people, whether it's on our Facebook Access Possibility School group page, or, you know, through our website, accesspossibilityschool.com, is to let us know what other topics would you like to have us cover. And if you have certain questions or challenges that you may like to hear, maybe our point of view or what we have used, or we'd love to hear from you. What are you using as parents or teachers that's working for you? So I'd just like to open that up for people to share.
And if you like what you're hearing and you'd like more information, you can sign up for our newsletter on our website, accesspossibilityschool.com. You can sign up by putting in your email address there and tuning in to our radio show next week.
Excellent. And what's our radio show next week? Anybody know?
I don't have the title in front of me, but tune in. I mean, you can always go in and
tune
look
in and
us
find
up
out.
Rock Star Radio.
And it's always posted on our Facebook page, and we try to post it as many places as we can. So if you want to know what our next topic will be, it will be on our Facebook page. And also, if you want to check out what we do, we are a school for kids from kindergarten through to middle school. And we also do adult classes too. So if you want a taste of what we do as an adult, you can check us out.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. Thanks, Sylvia.
Have a beautiful day.
Bye. Bye.